Welcome to the Motherhood Kit, your go-to podcast for navigating the ups and downs of mothering. I'm Yamel Belen, and today we're diving into the topic of toddler sleep needs. Once the newborn stage wears off and we're starting to get into a good sleep rhythm, it seems that the toddler stage just smacks us all in the face. But don't worry. Today, we're joined by Jane Havens, who's a certified sleep consultant and runs her very own sleep consultant practice, Snooze Fest by Jane Havens. As a new parent overwhelmed by exhaustion, Jane found herself reading everything she could get her hands on in order to get her own son to sleep through the night. She then applied what she learned from both children, implementing good sleep habits very early on. Together, we will discuss what is happening in the toddler world, which disrupts sleep. We're going to dive into tips on transitioning from crib to a toddler bed, or perhaps why you should consider delaying that in your home. Stay till the end, where we will also highlight how to create a calming bedtime routine and how consistency is key when tackling toddler sleep issues. Hi, and welcome to the Motherhood Kit. I'm your host, Yamel Belen, a registered nurse, doula, lactation expert, business owner, and most importantly, a proud mom of five. Join in weekly as I share my wisdom and dive deep with parenting experts to empower you with your very own toolkit. From prenatal excitement to the real, raw, sometimes harrowing, and often hilarious sides of mothering. So whether you're seeking guidance, camaraderie, or just want to lighten your load with loads of laughs, the Motherhood Kit is your safe space to connect, learn, and thrive. Let's dive in. Hi, Jane. Welcome to the Motherhood Kit podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here today.
Me too. I'm so excited to have you. I know this is a conversation that oftentimes I feel gets overlooked because we're so focused on those parents with tiny babies in their arms. Those are the parents that we're always thinking that are lacking sleep or that are having trouble with getting their babies to sleep. But as we all know, and those of us that are moms, once we get to the toddler stage, it can become very challenging as well. So I'm so thankful to have an expert like yourself join the show and be able to add to everyone's toolkit. Before we dive into that, can you introduce yourself and tell everybody about the work that you do?
Sure. So my name's Jane Havens. I live in Baltimore, Maryland with my husband and two children. They're 11 and 7. I got into this line of work of sleep consulting because when my son was born 11 years ago, he was naturally a pretty solid sleeper out of the gate. And as a first-time mom, I thought, like, I'm amazing. I'm doing everything right. You know, I have it all. I thought I had figured it out. And then at around 4 months, he went through that classic 4-month sleep regression that a lot of parents experience. And as a first-time mom, I had no idea what was going on. Why was my baby, who was previously sleeping through the entire night, now up every single hour wanting a pacifier? So I took to, this was before Facebook groups, this was before Instagram was such a thing, you know, I took to books. I went to Barnes & Noble and sat on the floor and read a bunch of books, and it was like baby center message blogs, and I figured out how to get him sleeping. Basically, what I realized is I needed to teach him how to fall asleep independently so that he would be better positioned to get himself back to sleep independently when he was rousing awake overnight. So we implemented some sleep training. It was pretty life-changing for my entire family. I saw such a difference in my baby's temperament and his happiness level on a full night of sleep. And really, it was amazing for me, my husband, our marriage, and it was just a really incredible experience. So I took that personal experience and I just sort of started helping friends and friends of friends. And for years, just did this work as a hobby. I wasn't getting paid for it. I just would help friends get their babies to sleep. When my daughter was born 4 years later, She was cranky. She had a milk soy protein intolerance. She was colicky. And I was pretty burnt out from 4 years of stay-at-home momming and having a really difficult baby at home. And I was looking for an outlet. So I decided to take my hobby and my passion and turn it into a business. I got certified to work as a sleep consultant. And what was intended to be a little bit of a side hustle or passion project turned into a very legitimate full-time, I shouldn't say full-time, but like full income business very, very quickly. And so I supported families for a couple of years and then actually decided to create my own training program to train others to do this work. So I still have both sides of my business. I support families one-to-one through sleep training and supporting them just through the process of establishing healthy and independent sleep habits for their kids. And then I also train, mentor, and certify others to do this work as well.
Amazing. And this work is so necessary. And I know that this sounds so, I don't know, maybe someone listening that maybe hasn't delivered yet may be thinking, do I really need help with that? Won't I be able to figure it out? But I find that with my clients, we're dealing with so much of the outside world that just even a little bit of sleep interruption throws us off. Our life is already so stressful and mothering just we have such a big load that whenever we're not sleeping well, and like you said, once you saw that your baby started sleeping well, they were less cranky as well, because we don't take that into account. We just think that us as adults, if we don't sleep well, then we're going to be cranky. But our babies and our toddlers, even our older kids, I know my 10-year-old and my 8-year-old, just the other day, the 8-year-old crawled into my 10-year-old's bed. And so the 10-year-old woke up super cranky because she was like, Alana crawled in my bed and I didn't sleep well all night. So I had to deal with that in the morning. So yeah, sleep is so vital for all of us, even our tiny babies. So when we talk about toddler sleep, one thing that people don't realize, and I talk to clients about this a lot because as a doula, as a lactation expert, I'm talking to parents about sleep all the time. And actually, this world of sleep consultant really or consulting really interests me because so many families really need it. But I talk to families a lot and one, they're not understanding, you know, why is a newborn getting up? But then when they get to the toddler stage, they're like, oh my God, Yama, I thought that we were over this. So can we talk a little bit about what is going on with a toddler that switches up their sleep routine?
So there's so many reasons for why toddlers could have a hard time sleeping. I think we can put them into a couple of buckets. One, they never were taught to sleep well in the first place, right? I just got off the phone yesterday with a mom of 2.5-year-old twin boys who have never slept really through the night ever. They were in mini cribs and then transitioned to toddler beds. And mom was sort of justifying that like sleep is actually a lot better now, I think because they actually have space. Like they were in these tiny little mini cribs and she moved them to beds. So now they have more space, but mom is still sitting with them while they fall asleep, holding their hands. Mm-hmm. And then they wake up in the middle of the night and they're looking for that same support. They've never learned how to fall asleep independently. So maybe they've had ups and downs over the years where sleep was okay. And maybe it was horrible at times and then okay and then horrible, but they've really never had the foundation of healthy and independent sleep skills. They never learned that they're capable of being kissed goodnight and a parent leaves the room and they just close their eyes and let their bodies relax and fall to sleep. They were never given that skill. So a lot of the time that happens, it's just like they've never learned. Sometimes it is separation anxiety at play. Maybe sleep was going really, really well and the child starts preschool for the first time or has a new nanny caring for them. Something happens in their life where all of a sudden they're feeling a little bit less safe and secure or they're wanting some extra support and TLC from a parent. And, you know, maybe parents provide a little bit of added support at bedtime where they used to be able to just kiss their child goodnight and leave the room. Now the parent find that their child is crying and a little anxious at bedtime. So they're sticking around longer, waiting for the child to fall asleep and then sneak out. And that can sort of set off a spiral of lots of night wakings in the middle of the night. You know, parents sometimes will say to me, my child used to sleep through the night, but now they're waking, you know, 3 to 8 times in the middle of the night. And what I will say to them is actually, they probably were waking 3 to 8 times in the middle of the night previously. They just had the confidence to get themselves back to sleep without your support. all humans rouse throughout the night. Infants do it, toddlers do it, adults do it. We rouse throughout the night. I wake up and sometimes maybe my comforter feels warm and maybe I'll flip my pillow over and find another comfy spot and go back to sleep. I don't cry about it in the middle of the night because I'm an adult and I don't want to wake up my husband, but it doesn't, right. Nobody wants to be up in the middle of the night, right? So when our kids wake up in the middle of the night, if they lack the confidence around getting themselves back to sleep, that's when the crying starts. So, you know, either they've never had the skills or maybe they had the skills and then they're lacking. And then there are other things can happen, like trying to think of another example. Maybe if you think about a child who's 3 years old and dropping their nap, if a child is dropping their nap and they're super overtired from a long day, they're not getting a rest in the middle of the day, they might start waking up screaming an hour after they were put to bed at bedtime. That's usually a sign of overtiredness. So it could be a scheduling thing. It could be just lack of confidence or separation anxiety, or they just never had the skill to begin with.
I also noticed that toddlers now become so aware of their surroundings, especially when they're learning new skills, maybe more verbal skills, or they just learn something new throughout the day. I find that that can impact their sleep too, which is something that I refer to with clients with brand new babies too. You know, we know the growth spurts at like 6 weeks and so on and so forth. So I see that a lot. Do you see that with clients that reach out to you at that point when their child is just like, maybe they enrolled them in like some pre-K or something like that, and then now sleep just kind of like takes a turn?
Sure. So developmental milestones, meeting new milestones can definitely impact sleep. What I will say is that for children who have independent sleep skills, a child who has a language explosion might wake up in the middle of the night and start talking to themselves and babble and have a whole little conversation to themselves in their crib. And then when they realize they're tired again, they just lie down and go back to sleep. A child without the confidence and the independent sleep skills will use that night waking as an opportunity to seek support from a parent to help them get back to sleep. So, you know, for children who have the skills, I don't think the milestones negatively impact sleep the same way it's impacted for children who don't have that confidence in their sleep skills.
And so I heard you say with your client, she called you and of course she put the toddlers in a toddler bed. So the twins in a toddler bed. What are some tips that you would recommend when we are making that transition? I know that a lot of clients of mine, they'll start that transition because the child is getting out of the crib. So they're already becoming so creative that they're getting out of the crib. So what would be some tips to get them prepared so that there isn't a sleep regression?
So I'm a firm believer that children should stay in their cribs as long as possible.
Tell me more about that, because everybody is just, and I'm actually the same. I thought I was kind of crazy with that. But a lot of people I notice are just like dying to get these toddler beds. And I know the toddler beds are so cute, but they're not really that necessary right away.
Yeah, it's a huge mistake if you ask me. My kids were both in cribs until they were 4 years old. And my daughter was actually 4 and a few months. And the only reason I put her in a bed is because she came home from her, this is funny. She came home from her pre-K class one day and she was mortified to learn that every single child in her class was sleeping in a big kid bed except for her. And she was mortified. And she just couldn't believe it. Like, she thought all of her friends slept in cribs too. And they were all in big kid beds and she was in a crib and she just was beside
herself. That is hilarious that they were having this conversation at 4 years old. Oh my God.
Yeah. I don't know how the conversation came up, but she came home and she was not happy with me. So that prompted the transition to a bed for her. And she was old enough and she was mature enough and she had impulse control and she understood rules and boundaries and the transition went just fine. But I am a firm believer that you keep children in their cribs for as long as possible, especially children who enjoy their cribs. They've been sleeping in a crib since they were an infant. It's the only thing they know. Putting them into a bed doesn't feel safe for them. They feel safe in their crib. That's what they know. That's what they love. That's where they're used to sleeping. So to change that up for them before they're ready is really hard and causes unnecessary struggle. A lot of parents will transition their toddler to a bed because a new baby's coming and they don't want to buy a second crib. And I just see that as a huge mistake. You can get a really inexpensive crib at IKEA or on Amazon or in a buy nothing Facebook group, or you can use a pack and play. There's so many different options that I really don't think that having a newborn in the house is reason to put a two-year-old into a bed. And when it is time to transition to a bed, I think the two best times to do that are if it's necessary from a safety perspective. Mm-hmm. So if you have a child climbing out of their crib, then 100% they need to be in a bed. Or if they're just four and embarrassed, then it's time to probably put them into a bed. But the most important component, regardless of age, is communication. So I always tell parents that the same way that your child understands not to play with the knobs on the stove, they should understand that being in a bed, there's a safety concern around that, right? Having the freedom to roam their room, having the freedom to roam the house in the dark, especially if they live in a house with stairs and the bedroom is on the top floor, you know, it is not safe to get in and out of bed in the dark, right? And it's a privilege to be in a bed. And there are certain rules around being in a bed. Just like when you get into the car, you buckle your car seat. Mommy puts your car seat on super tight. When you're in a bed, you stay in your bed. And that's for safety. Because if you get out of your bed in the middle of the night and it's dark and you bump into something or you fall down the stairs, that's super dangerous. So little children can understand rules, just like they understand that they can't play with electrical sockets or the knobs on the stove. They understand that they need to have their car seats buckled. They can understand the rules around sleeping in a bed. So setting those expectations up front and being really clear around the rules and the boundaries, I think, is most important. In addition to talking about this, actually role-playing it is really helpful. So showing them during the daytime what their bedtime routine is going to look like, what it looks like to lie down and find their rest. It's really hard. You know, we always want to tell our kids just like close your eyes and go to sleep. But actually telling a child to go to sleep is really hard because they're thinking, I don't understand that. What does that mean to go to sleep? I don't know how to go to sleep, right? We don't know how to do that. So I always encourage parents to tell their children to close their eyes and just let their body relax or find their rest, because children don't know what it means to fall asleep. Like, how do I do that? What are the steps, right? So close your eyes, let your body relax, and just let your body drift into calm. Yeah. That's how you talk to your child about going to sleep.
Hi, moms. We know you are fiercely navigating the busy world of mothering. The Motherhood Kit podcast has got your back. This episode is proudly sponsored by One Love Nanny Services, reshaping childcare in Tampa Bay with a personal touch. Imagine tailored, exceptional childcare without the hassle. One Love Nanny understands the demands of your fast-paced life. We offer time-saving, customized nanny matching services and convenient babysitting memberships. Elevate your childcare experience with precision and care. Visit onelovenanny.com today because every family deserves exceptional support. So what I'm hearing is definitely if you don't think developmentally your child is ready for that conversation about safety, then maybe just keeping them in the crib is the best thing. There's no need to rush. And it's funny to me how we want to enjoy these moments and we know that these moments go so fast, but sometimes we are making them go faster. Because I see that all the time. They're like, oh, I'm looking for a toddler bed. And the baby just turned like one. And I say baby, and I still refer to my 8-year-old as my baby. But I think that we need to kind of check in with ourselves and really take note that sometimes we are rushing things and then we cause disruption as well for them, that it's not only like them and their fault. Because of course, when there is sleep interruption right away, we're like, oh my God, my kid didn't sleep last night and today is going to be hell. But what did we do to cause that?
Yeah, I think that that's absolutely right. You know, when you said, what did we do to cause that? I want to address that.
Yes, please.
I think that most parents get into power struggles and just like general struggles with their children about sleep because they are not accepting their role as being in charge of sleep in their home. I always say that that is a parent's job to manage sleep in the home, just like it's our job to manage our children's childcare. Like our 3-year-old doesn't decide what daycare they go to. Our 3-year-old doesn't decide who their nanny is. The car seat is another example. 3-year-olds or 2-year-olds don't do the research to figure out which car seat is the safest and going to fit nicely in your car. That is an adult decision. And I view sleep as being in that same category. When your 2-year-old or your 3-year-old is in charge of what sleep looks like in your home, my guess is that it's not going very well. So this is an area of parenting that parents need to feel really confident and just take control of what sleep looks like. Because when your child is in control, that's when it sort of slips away. The other thing that I see a lot is that parents are making decisions based on what's fastest. Like, how do I get my child back to sleep as quickly as possible? How do I get bedtime to be wrapped up as quickly as possible? And they're making accommodations or making decisions based on that, or just how loud it's getting, right? Like, if you have a 2-year-old or a 2.5-year-old that doesn't want to go to bed and they're having a tantrum about it, if your response is to do whatever possible to stop the noise and to end the tantrum and to just get them to whatever you need to do to just get them to quiet down and go to sleep, the next night is going to be the same, right? So children need to understand that it's okay for them to have big feelings around the idea that bedtime is happening, right? Like, it's okay for them to be upset about it. And it's okay for them to have big feelings and to even express those emotions. That's okay. You have permission to express your big feelings. But also, I love you. You're safe. It's time for bed. Good night. And when you adopt that mentality and that sort of shift in perspective around what bedtime should look like in your house, then your child will see that this is not an area that's negotiable. There are a lot of things in life that are negotiable with toddlers and preschoolers. I think bedtime just shouldn't be one of them. And when they see that there's no wiggle room there, like when mommy or daddy says it's time for bed, that means it's time for bed, then it all gets better very, very quickly.
Yeah, I agree with that. There are other areas where we can give them autonomy, because I know that gentle parenting is becoming very, very big. We talk about it a lot, and I am one of those that believe in that as well. But in my house, bedtime is non-negotiable, and I want to give a little bit of insight to listeners, because I always like them to see themselves in the future. I've been parenting for 26 years now, so I want you to see yourself in the future. My 26-year-old, my 23-year-old, my 17-year-old, they all go to bed about 8:30, 9 o'clock. And it's wonderful, I have to tell you, because when my daughter went away to college, number two went away to college to like a dorm, and everybody kept telling, because she was in New York. So everybody kept telling me, oh, she must be partying, you know, every night. And I was like, nope, no, she's not, because she goes to bed at 9 o'clock. And we always, that was a non-negotiable for us, not only because I understood that they needed to rest, but it also gives you as a parent some downtime to be able to like breathe. So if we're not putting in that boundary where it's like, no, you can put on whatever you want to put on tomorrow for preschool. You can probably even have a choice on your breakfast, but the time for us to rest, to go to sleep, that's not a negotiable. And it impacts them later on. If we give them the freedom to make that decision, which they don't even know why they're making that decision, tomorrow it's going to be horrible for them when they have, you know, swim lessons or playtime with their friends. They're just going to be grumpy. So we have to get ahead of that. I love that you pointed out on that word. That's a non-negotiable. Now, can you tell me what you would recommend? Of course, there's a lot of people that don't start off with learning like you did, or getting hooked up with someone like you, an expert like yourself. So let's say someone is listening right now and is in the thick of it with a toddler. What are some strategies that they can put into place tonight? And I want everyone to know that, like you said, it is not overnight. It is not something that's just going to happen tonight just because they say so. So what are some strategies for creating a calming bedtime routine that can help toddlers transition to sleep?
So my process that I work my clients through is pretty involved. I don't think we have time to fully go into it here, but what I'm going to explain are sort of the, like a little bit of the method, but also the mindset behind all of it. And I think actually the mindset piece is more important, okay? Because really, it's not about what you do. It's about like a change in your perspective where you realize like what's going on in my home right now is not working for my family. And me as the adult, as the parent in this house, it is within my control to make a change. And it's okay for my child to be upset about it, right? You mentioned gentle parenting. And yes, there's this whole movement towards gentle parenting. Gentle parenting doesn't mean permissive parenting. That's not what it means. And I think a lot of parents think, okay, I'm a gentle parent. And that means I never let my child cry, or I never want him to be upset, or I never want her to whatever. And that's not what gentle parenting is. Gentle parenting is explaining why you're doing what you're doing and involving them in the communication process. It doesn't mean that you never say no to your child. That's not gentle parenting. And so I think a lot of parents are, you know, scrolling Instagram and they're watching these quick little reels and getting a soundbite and they're missing the big picture that, yes, it's okay to be kind and patient and thoughtful with your child. But in the same breath, it's also really important that you're still the parent and you're setting what I like to call a loving limit or a respectful boundary with your child. So with regard to the method, really at the end of the day, you just need to work towards having your child do bedtime or fall asleep more independently. That's the whole key to this. And it can be done gradually. For example, for a child who has a mom or a dad lying in bed with them while they fall asleep, maybe you just start by sitting on the edge of the bed instead of lying down with them. Maybe a few nights later, you're sitting on the floor instead of in bed with them. Maybe a few nights later, you're in the middle of the room and then by the door and then eventually in the hallway. That would be a really gradual way of pulling yourself out of the room at bedtime. Eventually, once you're out of the room, if the child is in a bed, they might come chasing after you. So what do? You walk them back to bed. And there's going to be like some screaming and crying involved, probably.
And that can be done gently. You can still be a gentle parent.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think a lot of people think that these routines mean, well, I'm not going to be able to spend time with them before bed. I talk to our clients a lot about, even with newborns, where we can cuddle, like we do cuddling before bedtime. We do that as soon as they shower. They know, the girls know that it's the cuddle time. Sometimes they are allowed to come and lay in our bed and cuddle with us. But then when it's time, when it's that 8:30, 8:45, they're like, okay, good night. And they start kissing us and they go, because we've already established that routine. Doesn't mean that I'm not spending time with them before bed, because I know for a lot of us, that time is precious, right? And we don't want to lose that. But there's still a way for us to gradually give them that space to be independent sleepers.
Absolutely. And you make a great point. Part of making separation easier at bedtime is absolutely prioritizing connection in the hours leading up to bedtime. I'll often tell my clients, when you come home from work, park your cell phone somewhere, put it in a docking station, put your cell phone away. Be fully present with your child. Instead of watching TV before bed, maybe you can implement family game night, get out a game of Zingo or Candyland or Spot It, and really connect as a family and all be very present and enjoy the time leading up to bedtime. I think when our children have their cups filled, for lack of a better way of saying it, it does make it easier to separate. Also, as I mentioned before, earlier in this conversation, communication, setting expectations, having a family meeting, discussing the new rules and expectations around bedtime is really, really valuable. Even for young children, 18-month-old children, even if they're not talking, they have receptive language skills more often than not, and they can understand everything. So you sit down, you have a really brief conversation with them about it. You physically go and role play, and then you actually do what you say you're going to do, right? So children respond really well to being advanced with information and then actually having parents follow through with what they say they're going to do. And where the breakdown typically happens is you do all the pre-work, you have the conversation, you do the role play, you do bedtime, and then your child has a meltdown, because typically that works, right? When children get really worked up, parents, their blood pressure goes up, our ears, our brains, we get all sort of amped up and it gives us anxiety. And we tend to want to do anything possible to sort of quiet it down. And so instead of trying to quiet the noise, just reminding them that like they're safe, they're loved, we're going to follow the plan. And really, sometimes it's giving them permission to cry. Like, it's okay that you're upset about this. Totally understand that this feels different. I understand that this is new. We're still going to do it the new way. And that's okay, right? Just like learning to pee on the potty feels hard for kids sometimes. I often give the example, my 11-year-old sometimes struggles with challenging math homework and he sometimes cries about it. And I get it, because it's way harder than math that I can do. Like, I can't even help him. But my husband will sit there with him and not do his math homework for him, because if we just did it for him, he would never learn it. So we support him through the process of learning something new, even if that involves tears and frustration, and we just give him space to figure it out. And then he realizes next time, okay, like even if he does cry about it, we're not going to do his math homework for him. And then we skip all the crying part because he knows that, like, you know, the result is still going to be the same. And so really, whether you pull yourself out of the process gradually or quickly, either way is okay. I consider it to be very respectful regardless, as long as you communicate with them in advance, right? So like the whole idea of pulling yourself out of the room gradually, where like, you know, maybe you sit on the bed first and then on the floor and then in the middle of the room and then the hall, that's a really like gradual and gentle way of doing it. I also think it's gentle to not do any of that, to say, you know what, starting tonight, Henry, when I kiss you goodnight and I put you in bed, I'm going to go fold some laundry in my bedroom. Let's practice this. Let's role play it and show him exactly what it's like. And when you get tucked in for bed and mommy goes to do laundry, if you come out of bed, I'm going to walk you back one time and I'm going to give you a kiss. I'm going to tuck you in again. And if you come out a second time, I'm going to say, I love you. You're safe. Please go back to bed. And you've rehearsed all of this. And then you just send him back to bed. And yes, like it might create some strife for a brief period of time. But ultimately, after he struggles for a little bit, he's going to go back to bed. And then you're going to celebrate in the morning because he did it. And the next night's going to be easier. Our children are capable of doing things that are a little bit outside of our comfort zone. And when we give them an opportunity to try, they really do rise to the occasion and they impress us every single time.
I agree. And one thing that I'm hearing, the theme that I'm hearing you and your method and that we should be taking away from this is consistency. And I love that you said, you know, you have to have a family meeting. So that means like you and your partner, you both have to be aligned with this. Or maybe you have extra help. Sometimes there are blended families that may be listening. Maybe a grandma lives in the home or something like that. Or you have a nanny. And everyone has to be on board in the method or the way that we're putting this toddler to sleep. Because if it's inconsistent, you're never going to have success. You're going to have a toddler who's waking up throughout the night for a long time.
Exactly. And really, it boils down to a shift in mindset. Everybody has to decide that what's currently happening in your household is not what's in the best interest of anybody in your family. It's not working. And so when something is not working, it's totally within your right as a parent to make a change. And it's okay if that change feels hard. It's okay if your child is uncomfortable with the change. You know that as their parent, that's the right choice for your family. Just like if you had a nanny working for you that you realized was no longer a good fit for one reason or another. Yeah. Something came up, you saw something that you didn't like, and it was no longer a good fit, and you decided to make a change. Your three-year-old might not understand that, and that's not your three-year-old's decision. That's your decision, right? Or if you have to change daycares, maybe your child was really happy at daycare, but you saw some stuff that you were not happy with, and so you decided to make a change. It's okay for you to make those changes. Your child will adjust. It's hard in the short term, but you're doing what's best for your family. So it's really just a shift in mindset. Like, I know I'm doing what's right for my child. I know I'm doing what's right for my family, and feel really confident in that decision and just hold the line.
Yeah. And one last thing that I just want to point out, just because you said daycare, let's all keep in mind that our toddlers that are in daycare do pick up germs and they will get sick. So don't let illnesses discourage you. There may be a night here and there. If they're not feeling well, of course they want us. Of course they want us to get up and come to them. And, you know, they're going to need extra water or they're going to need medication throughout the night. But don't let that discourage you or feel defeated. Like, I did all this work for nothing. No, you just pick back up once they start feeling better. And we start with the routine once again. And like Jane said, you may have to start at the end of the bed. Then you start at, you know, the middle of the room. Then you work yourself out of the room so that they can soothe themselves to sleep. I really love these tips. And I think that they're easy to take away and to implement even, you know, tomorrow, or they can contact you and start to work with you one-on-one. Is there a way to work with you digitally for someone that is not directly in your area?
Yeah, actually, all of my work is remote. I live in Baltimore, but my clients are all over the country and even abroad. Actually, most of my clients are not local. So absolutely, I can support you virtually. And my favorite age group is, I would say, like 3 to 6 year olds. But I work with children ages 12 weeks all the way up to, I don't know, 7, 8, maybe even 9 year olds. There's no real hard cutoff on the older range of the spectrum, but I love those like early, you know, preschooler, early elementary age kiddos are my favorite.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being with us. I'm so happy that we were able to add this to everyone's toolkit.
Thank you for having me.
Let's continue the dialogue. Connect with me on Instagram at Yamel Belen or on TikTok at The Motherhood Kit. Your feedback is incredibly valuable to us. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider leaving a review on your preferred podcast platform. And don't forget to hit that follow button so you never miss an episode. Thank you for being part of this amazing community. Let's continue to hold hands in this season of motherhood. Until next time.